Highbridge, a division of Recorded Books, presents Uncovering Dinosaur Behavior, What They Did and How We Know, by David Hone, read by Graham Mack. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and e-book formats of this book. Preface. For almost as long as scientists have been unearthing the fossils of dinosaurs, there has been speculation, discussion, and study of their possible behaviours. This started with the simplest of inferences, such as those animals with leaf-shaped teeth bearing large serrations were herbivorous, and soon moved on to considerations about dinosaurs living in groups, climbing trees, hunting for food, and everything else that goes into the behavioural repertoire of a large terrestrial vertebrate. In the mid-1800s, dinosaur bones mostly amounted to a relative handful of very partial skeletons, and animal behaviour was not even a field of zoological study in its own right. So one can easily forgive some extrapolations that are, in glorious hindsight, somewhat absurd. Still, the fundamental challenge that plagued these early paleontologists is still with us. If one would care to study, say, the problem-solving abilities of a tortoise, the memory of a crow, the preferred group size of an iguana, or the mating rituals of a parrot, one has only to observe the living animals to gain some insights into their lives. We can attach trackers to everything from whales to bees to see when and where they forage and for how long, and see how this varies with temperature, latitude, season, and however many of the other infinite variables we care to assess. Single animals can be followed for their entire lives, and multiple generations can be studied in the lab, their genomes analysed, relationships determined, and experiments set up to test ideas about how and why they respond to certain stimuli. Quite simply, none of this is available to the paleotheologist. So everything about the lives of ancient species must be inferred, often from very limited evidence, and therefore always with at least a grain, and sometimes a full cellar, of salt. That is not to say that the study of dinosaur behaviour is simply speculation or has no foundation in science, or that there is no way through the often conflicting positions that have been advocated for one behaviour over another. Ideas can be tested and supported or rejected, comparisons made to living species and their patterns of behaviour, and mechanical hypotheses. Is this tooth strong enough to bite through that bone? Rigorously assessed. There are big gaps and uncertainties, and some previously confidently held understandings need tearing down, or at least a rethink. But recent years have brought a reassessment of dinosaur behaviour, and it is no longer a case of anything goes, throwing out some unsupported and wild hypothesis in the last line of a paper and leaving it there. Well, it's rather less common, at least. But it does mean we have more and more thoughtful and insightful pieces being put forward by more researchers on more new fossils. It is therefore an exciting time for anyone with an interest in dinosaur behaviour. The intent of this book is to be one for paleontologists who want to know about behaviour, and a book for ethologists who want to know something about dinosaurs, and hopefully something of interest to biologists in general. The obvious risk, of course, is that it will fall short in every area and be a book for no one. But I can't ignore that. For the early chapters in particular, it will be necessary to cover some things that may well be important new information for one listener and oversimplified or trivial for another. On a related note, while the content is hopefully rigorous in its approach to the scientific literature, My writing style tends to be more conversational in tone, but is at least intended to be both accessible and useful to the average listener, the student, and the academic. Whether or not I have succeeded in these aims, only time and the online reviews will tell. While the book has been written with the expectation that it would be listened to in full, I am well aware that many people will want to listen to only specific chapters or sections. Given that it is often hard to separate out many features of behaviours from their intimate association with other aspects of biology, e.g., horns that were used to fight with rivals were also likely to be deployed as visual signals. Some features make multiple appearances in the text, and there is a certain amount of cross-referencing within the book to hopefully make it easier for the listener to track down topics that occur in more than one chapter, or where areas of research intersect. Although scientific studies that specifically look at dinosaur behaviour are relatively few and far between, compared to, say, studies of their anatomy and evolutionary history, there are nevertheless a considerable number of dedicated papers and book chapters in this area, and plenty more that comment on key points in passing. It would be impossible to curate an entirely comprehensive approach to this material, and so, in my choice of citations, I have chosen to focus on more recent references and overarching reviews or classic and important papers. Similarly, there are more than a few fringe hypotheses or ideas out there for dinosaurs, more than for most or any other fossil groups, and attention cannot be given to every single known suggestion for, say, the function of the arms of Tyrannosaurus. I will therefore generally stick to ideas that have been relatively well supported in the literature, or at least those that have been more prominent in discussions of dinosaur behaviour. Moreover, this book also takes what is perhaps a liberal approach to behaviour and includes aspects of animal biology, such as their occupation of different habitats and the nature of their senses. There might be a lack of detail about how a dinosaur that lived in a coastal region versus one that inhabited upland woodlands would have interacted with its environment. But this aspect of their ecology would have profoundly influenced each species' behaviour, given differences in climate and available cover, for example. Similarly, while any specifics about their behaviour might be hard to determine, working out that a species had high visual acuity and limited olfaction, for example, would clearly also be important considerations for what kind of stimuli they might respond to and what was ignored. If this book stuck only to direct interactions with other animals or direct evidence of behaviour, it would be considerably shorter. Instead, the major chapters attempt to cover both the background biology to various aspects of behaviour, why do animals live in groups, why do animals fight, and then also hypotheses and available data that have been established for various behaviours in various dinosaurs. So rather than a list of studies that show that species X likely did Y, this is hopefully a more integrated work that covers our general understanding of dinosaur behaviour, and by looking at the origins of hypotheses and the mechanisms of obtaining these conclusions, provides a basis for further inferences and studies in the future. Therefore, this is not just a catalogue of what we know, or what we are arguing about, but an account of how we got there, and perhaps routes to resolve the conflicts and develop more knowledge going forward. It is also the case that some areas of research into dinosaur behaviour are very deep, and others much more limited. For various reasons, inevitably large carnivores tend to attract a lot of interest, and in contrast, the giant sauropods have very few preserved skulls, making their brains and senses hard to study. And I'll be unapologetic in following those patterns here. This means that some major groups of dinosaurs will get very little attention, and the overexposed and hyper-charismatic megafauna will continue to dominate. However, given how many studies do focus on single species, so that extrapolation or inference is necessary to say anything meaningful about their relatives, this is not such a bad choice as it may first appear. There may arguably be too many papers focusing on Tyrannosaurus rex, for example, but it does provide an excellent point of reference for its closest relatives, and to a certain degree, for large predatory dinosaurs in general. Thus, this book will reflect the current literature and research trends, even if that's not always ideal. And I can at least flag for those interested in the field that there is a clear need to redress some balances in the future. Chapter 1. An Introduction to Dinosaurs. The Dinosauria represent an extremely successful group of tetrapods that were the dominant terrestrial group of most of the Mesozoic era, and in the birds have comfortably over 10,000 living species as descendants. Throughout this book, I will refer to dinosaurs and dinosauria as a paraphyletic group, therefore excluding both Mesozoic and modern birds, unless explicitly stated otherwise. Although various fragmentary fossils that we now recognize as being dinosaurian were being discussed in the 18th century, they came to prominence with the naming of the British carnivore Megalosaurus in 1824 and herbivore Iguanodon in 1825, and the coining of the name Dinosauria, or fearfully great lizards, by Richard Owen in 1842. The dinosaurs quickly grew in both numbers of species described and taxonomic ranks recognized, with ever more, ever better, and ever larger fossils being discovered. Dinosaurs soon became established as a major area of interest in the burgeoning field of paleontology, and have become central to the study of the history of life on Earth. Figure 1.1, which can be found in the print and ebook versions of this book. Dinosaurs are no longer considered the cold-blooded, tail-dragging, stupid, lizard-like monsters of the Victorian age, but are instead recognized as animals that were upright, active, fast-growing, and if not especially intelligent, certainly not stupid. Fossils of dinosaurs are now known from dozens of countries and from every continent, including Antarctica. In life, they occupied every ecosystem, from mountains to deltas and deserts to forests, and they included in their number the largest terrestrial animals of all time. We have fossils of dinosaurs with their skin and feathers intact, as well as other soft tissue structures, like coxcomb head crests, and even traces of the original patterns and colours of the living animals. These discoveries, coupled with 2 centuries of research, have enabled huge advances in the reconstruction of every aspect of the biology of dinosaurs. These ancient organisms are now firmly established in modern science, though there remain some large gaps and areas of uncertainty in our understanding of these incredible animals. Origins and relationships. Dinosaurs are members of the reptilian clade Archosauria, that includes modern crocodilians and their extinct ancestors and relatives, the Mesozoic flying reptiles, the pterosaurs, and a number of other groups. It is increasingly likely that the Chelonians, turtles, terrapins, and tortoises, are also archosaurs or their closest relatives, though this is still a subject of academic debate and is not currently certain. For simplicity, here they will be excluded from this clade. The archosaurs are united in the presence of an anteorbital fenestra, an opening in the skull between the nares and orbit, though this is secondarily lost in many groups, serrated teeth set in sockets in the jaws, and an upright stance with the limbs held under the body, though, as with so many defining features, evolutionary history has modified these in various groups, most notably to give the semi-sprawling posture of modern crocodilians. Among these various archosaurs were a group of small, under 2 meters in total length, bipedal carnivores or omnivores, called the dinosauromorphs, that ultimately gave rise to the dinosaurs. Sometime in the late part of the Middle Triassic, around 240 million years ago, the dinosaurs split from their dinosauromorph ancestors. At this time, there was a single major landmass, Pangaea, that was largely hot and dry, although early dinosaurs may have favoured the colder regions of this. Inevitably, the early dinosaurs look extremely similar to their nearest relatives, and the exact point of separation and differentiation between the two is uncertain. The genus Nyasasaurus, from the Middle Triassic of Tanzania, for example, may be either the oldest known dinosaur or the nearest dinosauromorph relative to the dinosaurs. Such is the closeness between the two at this point. Early dinosaurs were small bipedal carnivores. They were a relatively minor component of the early late Triassic terrestrial ecosystems. Though they diversified and grew in size, it was not until the extinction at the end of the late Triassic that dinosaurs became the dominant terrestrial group of the Mesozoic. The dinosaurs have long been split into 3 major clades, the theropods, which were bipedal and predominantly carnivorous, and are the ancestors of birds, the sauropodomorphs, which were herbivorous and were long-necked and mostly large, and the ornithischians, which were herbivorous and produced a much greater diversity of body forms than the other groups. The theropods and the sauropodomorphs are united into the saurischia, lizard-hipped reptiles, because of their anteriorly directed pubis, though derived theropods and birds reverse this, as the sibling taxon to the ornithischia, though recently this interpretation has been challenged. Reinterpretation of a number of traits, coupled with new discoveries, have suggested that in fact the theropods may lie with the ornithischians at the expense of the sauropodomorphs. This is controversial, though certainly possible, given the apparent absence of ornithischians in the Triassic. The exact nature of this split is largely irrelevant from the point of view of discussions of behaviour, though for simplicity and clarity, the traditional split into saurischia and ornithischia is used throughout. Major groups. Dinosaurs are known from around 1,500 valid genera, though this number is currently growing by 30 to 50 genera each year, and has been for at least a decade. Each of the 3 main clades is well represented with several hundred taxa, though the theropods are the most numerous of these, and the sauropodomorphs the least. The theropods range from small animals that were perhaps as little as 1 kilo through to giants like the largest Tyrannosaurus that were over 13 meters long and weighed perhaps 7 tons or more. Although the basic bipedal form of theropods was essentially universal, they vary enormously in skull size and in the lengths of the neck, legs, and especially the arms. Ancestrally, theropods were carnivorous, with sharp claws on the hands and feet. And all known truly carnivorous dinosaurs are theropods, although some were specialist fish or insect eaters. And members of a number of lineages in the Jurassic and Cretaceous switched to omnivory or even herbivory at various times. Numerous derived theropods are preserved with feathers and also show various bird-like features, such as hollow bones, part of the system of extension of the pulmonary tracts termed air sacs. And extensive research demonstrates that the birds ultimately derived from a group of small theropods in the Middle Jurassic. In particular, numerous small and feathered theropods are known from fossil beds of exceptional preservation. And so the transition to birds is one of the best studied and understood major evolutionary transitions in biology. The sauropodomorphs are famous for producing the largest terrestrial animals of all time. In the Triassic, the early sauropodomorphs, often termed prosauropods, were large for terrestrial animals at the time, but were small by the standards of those that came later. The prosauropods were predominantly bipedal, though some were quadrupeds as juveniles, and were characterized by relatively long necks with small heads and a large body, all adaptations for herbivory, though a handful of the very earliest species were probably omnivorous. In the Jurassic, these were replaced by the sauropods, quadrupedal animals that retained the small head, but now typically on an even longer neck, and would go on to produce giants that could exceed 50 tons. Sauropodomorphs also had pneumatic vertebrae, invaded by air sacs, and the largest of these animals had numerous vertebrae that were very light, considering their size. As a consequence of this, however, large parts of their skeletons are often poorly preserved, although the apneumatic, robust and massive limb bones are often found. Sauropods dominated the Jurassic landscapes, though they were rather less common in the Cretaceous, especially in the Northern Hemisphere. It would mischaracterize the Ornithischians to call them simply all the other dinosaurs, though they do show considerable variation in general form, unlike the two Saurischian lineages. The Ornithischians range from small 1-meter-long bipedal animals up to 15-meter-long giant quadrupeds. There were animals covered in armored plates and spikes, those with giant frills, crests, bosses, and horns on their heads, as well as plenty that were unadorned. And at least some also had feather-like filaments on the body, in addition to scales. Again, with the exception of perhaps a few of the earliest taxa, which may have been omnivores, these were all herbivorous animals. Notably, we see some extraordinary adaptations to consume and process plants in the Ornithischians, compared to the sauropodomorphs, who largely were bulk feeders on as much plant matter as possible. And this included the evolution of a beak at the front of the jaw with teeth behind. Although rare early on, and currently absent in the Triassic, the Ornithischians were important components of Jurassic faunas, and in the Cretaceous became the dominant herbivores in most terrestrial ecosystems. More information on the major clades within the Theropoda, Sauropodomorpha, and Ornithischia can be found in the appendix. Basic biology. Although there are some serious gaps in the fossil record for dinosaurs, they appear to have occupied every major terrestrial ecosystem on Earth, given their truly global distribution. And this includes everything from sandy deserts to Arctic ice. As with many large modern animals, individual species are found across multiple environments, and there is strong evidence for migration of various dinosaurs. Annual migrations would have been the norm for at least some species. As noted previously, the dinosaurs include herbivores, omnivores, and carnivores. But beyond this most general of statements about their feeding ecology, we have strong evidence for both generalist and specialist diets. Among herbivores are a taxa known to have been selective or bulk feeders, and those that were high or low browsers. Among various theropods, there is evidence for long-distance pursuit predation, carnivory of other large animals, scavenging, piscivory, and insectivory. Evidence for these various patterns of behaviour come from numerous sources, such as fossilised coprolites, faeces, and regurgitated pellets, fossil stomach contents, tooth shape and wear on teeth, head shape and mouth sizes, and bite traces on bones, among others. The dinosaur fossil record is sufficient to trace some major evolutionary patterns throughout their history, and as such, we have been able to identify important trends across their 180 million years of evolution. Notably, dinosaurs tended to get bigger over time, producing numerous large lineages, though the transition to birds came from a sustained reduction in size of theropods across tens of millions of years. One other important transition is the repeated shift from bipedality to quadrupedality in various dinosaur lineages, something that is notably seen in the various herbivores, but never, or at least not yet, in the theropods. In terms of locomotion, across the huge number of dinosaurs known and the variation in body plans from 1 kilogram bipedal theropods to greater than 50-ton quadrupedal sauropods, there was a vast range of ability in terms of acceleration, top speed, and agility. Although dinosaurs were fundamentally terrestrial, many, if not all, could probably swim, although few, if any, seem to have been even close to what might be termed semi-aquatic. At least a few dinosaurs may have climbed trees, and some could dig relatively well. This is, of course, in addition to the flight of not just birds, but also various theropods close to the origins of birds that were at least gliders and perhaps also included some capable of powered flight. Numerous dinosaurian taxa are known from mass mortality sites, suggesting that large numbers of individuals died together, and there are also many extensive track sites that show footprints of what are likely to be members of the same species, moving and even foraging together. Doubtless, many of these taxa were gregarious or even social and spent considerable amounts of time living in groups with the potential, at least, for complex social interactions. However, the evidence for sociality in dinosaurs has often been overstated. Almost any indication of two skeletons of a species found together has been used at times to infer complex behaviours in a species, or even an entire clade. There is strong evidence at least for socio-sexual signals in dinosaurs, so many species were signalling to each other and to other species, even if they were not habitually living in groups. The most obvious of these signals include the many crests, frills, and horns of various lineages, but also include at least some of the feathers present on theropods, and display may have been an important component of early feather evolution. The exact nature of any display behaviours is all but impossible to determine, though there is strong evidence of some large theropods engaging in ritualistic scraping courtships, in which, just as some modern birds do, pairs of animals would scrape the ground with their feet, leaving distinctive marks which have, rather incredibly, been preserved. Such interactions between dinosaurs would not always be simply about communication, as there is strong evidence of antagonist behaviour in dinosaurs, especially between conspecific animals. Various preserved pathologies in fossil bones show that these animals fought one another, leaving serious injuries at times, numerous healed and occasionally infected bite marks, Tyrannosaurus, and stab wounds, horned dinosaurs, are known. Although harder to diagnose, there is also some evidence of interspecific combat between dinosaurs, in particular for ornithischians fending off predatory theropods. In addition to pathologies identified as resulting from combat, dinosaurs also inevitably accumulated injuries from daily living and show evidence of a variety of deformities and pathological bones, including multiple different afflictions in a single individual. Evidence of specific diseases or infections is harder to determine, though work has progressed in this area recently. And in this light, some modern diseases have been tentatively identified in dinosaur fossils. As the dominant terrestrial animals for the majority of the Mesozoic, Dinosaurs were key components of ancient ecosystems. They would have had a profound effect on their local environment and on the selection pressures on both other dinosaurs and other species. Exact in
sample complete. Ready to continue?